Hello, it's me, Lily, a frog, who lives in a pond and loves to tell stories. This story is part two of The Moosicorn, about Mordecai the Moosicorn, who just now is standing on his tall, awkwardly graceful moosey legs, blinking his impossibly inky brown and thickly lashed eyes, while his best friend Luna, who is sometimes a moth but just now is in the form of a pupa, dangles from one of his antlers by strong silk threads, snug in a chrysalis. Mordecai is standing in a bog amidst swamp spruce and lingonberries, aghast, because something dire has happened, and it's never happened to him before. As Mordecai the Moosicorn was munching on lingonberries, or bog cranberries as they're sometimes called, his right antler fell off. Then his left antler fell off. And then his unihorn, that third horn that generally tapers heavenwards in all its magical and pearlescent splendor, that horn right on his forehead between his two moosey antlers, began to sway almost imperceptibly in the evening breeze. And then it began to rest at a horribly askew angle. And then it began to sink downward until it fell off entirely, and it sunk into the bog with his right and left antler. Poor Mordecai. His antlers had been itchy, and he had taken to rubbing them against the rough bark of strong trees for some relief, and his unihorn had felt somewhat inflamed, prompting him to dip it into the coldest waters he could find in the evenings. But as long as he could remember, this had never happened before. He couldn't even tell his best friend Luna about it because she was in a pupal state.
Luna, oh no!
Where did the antler that Luna had attached herself get to? Oh, Mordecai raked his hoof through that peaty bog until it struck antler. Finally, and then he pulled out that antler with his strong teeth, and he was so glad to see his little friend's chrysalis still on it. He carried the antler out of the bog, and he looked for some sticky pine sap that he could use to glue it back on with. But no matter how much sap Mordecai applied to his antler, and the spot his antler used to be, it would not stick. It had, Mordecai realized, gotten very large and very heavy. So he decided to scrape his little friend in her chrysalis off of his antler and to attach her to some other part of his body, a part he knew would not fall off.
But what part of me could I attach it to that I know will not fall off?
Well, he considered his ears.
Well, they haven't fallen off before. But then again, neither have my antlers and unihorn. And they just did.
He considered his beard.
Well, that seems like a safe bet. Except that it's the first place to get all frosted up in the winter time when it drags through the snow. And winter is coming.
He considered his tail.
But I can't reach or see my own tail. I'd be worried about my little friend all the time, and I'd have no way to check that she was still there.
And he danced in a few circles trying to see his own tail, but only confirmed the truth that he could in fact not see his tail. He considered the place where his unihorn used to be, and as he furrowed his brow in deep consternation and thought, he knew it was the right spot. There was kind of an indentation there now, which was as warm as his beating heart. In fact, it was steaming a little bit in the cooling fall air, and so he put some pine sap there, and he delicately stuck his friend to his suddenly uncluttered forehead. When his friend was secured, Mordecai noticed a chipmunk was watching him.
You're a moose, right?
Said the chipmunk.
No, I'm a moosicorn. It's like a moose, but more magical. Like a unicorn.
Well, I've seen a moosicorn before, and he had a horn right in the middle of his forehead. And you don't, so I think you must be a moose.
Poor Mordecai. He'd been wanting his whole life to be more like everyone else, but now that he was just like everyone else, well, just like every moose else, he felt an indescribable sorrow. He felt his heart sinking, just like his antlers and unicorn did, into the gassy depths of an emotional swamp. And he knew, he just knew.
I need my unicorn back.
Not only did Mordecai feel off balance, but he also felt off kilter. And not only did he feel an uneasiness, but also a sort of malaise. Mordecai stood thinking about how to best describe this particular feeling of despondency. Was it a sort of crumminess? Or was it more of an in-the-dumpness that he was feeling? When did it begin, this dollar? Was it as he lost his horn and his antlers, or just before? Or was it immediately thereafter? It was then that Mordecai realized that he'd been processing the direness of this whole situation for well over an hour, which means that he'd gone an entire hour without grazing. This is not how moose or moosicorns are supposed to spend time in the late summer or early fall, where their one job is to get fat enough to survive the winter by constantly munching on poplar, noshing on willow, or slurping up bog berries.
I can't go on like this,
thought Mordecai.
I must seek the counsel of an elder. I will find an ent.
An ent is, of course, a magical talking tree and protector of the forest. When ents hide themselves, they're indistinguishable from regular trees, but they were easy for Mordecai to find. His unicorn always led him straight to ents. Or it used to. Now, without his unicorn to guide him, Mordecai didn't know which direction was true north, which meant he didn't know any of the other directions either. He didn't know which way was forwards, and he didn't know which way was backwards. He didn't know which way was inside out, and which was inside right. His tummy began to hurt. Then, a single yellow leaf twisted down from a balsam poplar tree and landed at his hooves, pointing like an arrow away from where he was standing. He took a deep breath.
Well, I might as well go in that direction.
Mordecai walked, and he walked. He walked, and he walked, and then he walked some more, but he still didn't find an ent. Now his tummy didn't just hurt, it twisted, gnarled, wrenched, and growled. It occurred to Mordecai that this was probably the single longest time he had gone without sustenance, and he'd better eat something soon. Just then, a willow tree caught his eye. Its branches were supple, graceful, sweet, with clusters of tiny yellow leaves at the tips, and before he knew it, he was chewing on branch after branch after branch, and then he found an alder tree and some spruce tips and a patch of cranberries and some young poplar bark and another willow and, oh, bless his moosicorn tufts and tail, the fresh top of a young pine tree.
Away from my tender top. You can't eat me, moose.
The short little pine tree was a young ant. At last.
Oh, young ant, protector of the forest, the most dire thing has happened to me today, and I need your advice.
Of course, I am here to help. I will begin by letting you know that you have something stuck to your forehead, right between your eyebrows. Above your impossibly inky brown and thickly lashed eyes, it is perhaps some sap with a cobweb stuck in it?
No, that is my best friend Luna, who is right now in a pupal state. I will protect her from all harm until next summer, when she will turn back into the most beautiful moth that ever danced under the aurora borealis.
I see! And how can I help you, my awkwardly graceful moose ally?
That's the thing. I'm not actually a moose. I'm a moosicorn. But my antlers and unicorn have fallen off, and I don't know which way is which. My identity hurts. Is that possible? It's like an ache or an angst or an owie right in the core of myself. I need my unicorn back, but it's sunk to the bottom of a bog. I wish it would grow back.
Well, my moosicorn friend, this is what you need to know. Winter is coming, and you are the most dangerously thin moosicorn I have ever met. I need you to, first of all, keep eating leaves and twigs so that you can survive the winter. Secondly, as the snow falls and the north winds blow, you must complete 3 good deeds in the service of the other creatures of the forest. If you do this when the snow melts and the rivers run freely, your unicorn and antlers will grow back.
Is that all? Oh, I know I can do that.
The moosicorn was so glad that his task was to eat twigs and leaves, as that was, in fact, his very favorite task in the world. And so he got straight to work on some alder leaves and some dogwood, and then he nibbled a bit of larch, but decided to pass it over for a nice stand of trembling aspen. And soon he fattened up again nicely, just in time, too, because the temperatures drop fast in the northern boreal forests. The days get shorter and shorter, and the snow flies, and the aurora dance in the crackling cold. Well, food is scarce. There are no leaves, just twigs dreaming of leafing out again in the springtime. And there are no bugs, no blossoms, and very little birdsong. Well, there are crows. There are always crows. And they struggle to find enough food as much as anyone, I guess, which is why the one who spotted the chrysalis stuck to the forehead of a sleeping moose, or at least what the crow thought was just a moose, figured nobody would miss whatever fat little larvae was stuck in there, and that it would make an excellent breakfast. The crow swooped down from a pink grapefruit-colored dawn sky and plucked Luna off of Mordecai's forehead in a smooth, decisive dive.
Hey, come back with that chrysalis. That's my best friend.
Mordecai woke immediately, standing on his awkwardly graceful long legs in a snowbank, in time to see a crow disappearing into the dawn with his best friend. The crow would have gobbled up her prize on the spot, except she heard the urgency in Mordecai's voice, and she knew that her prize was even more valuable than she had thought at first. So she flew in a low, slow draft so that Mordecai could catch up to her perched atop an old, hollow, lightning-scarred tree where she'd be just out of his reach, and they could negotiate. Mordecai knew that crows have an irrational fondness for shiny things, and as he ran after the crow with his friend in her beak, he thought,
"Think, Mordecai. What do you have that's shiny? What could you give a crow as a ransom for Luna? Oh, pretty Luna, sweet Luna, my best friend Luna."
And then he felt a kind of pulsing in the place where his unicorn used to be, and then a sort of itchy feeling, and a sort of a tickle, and he could see something so clearly in his mind's eye. It was a geode cave. Mordecai had discovered a cave full of plain gray dull rocks behind a waterfall once, but he didn't think much of it until now, when he could clearly see himself smashing one of those rocks open with his powerful forehoof to reveal a crystalline wonder inside the rock, a stunning display of purple amethyst crystals jutting out of the inside of the split rock like the skyline of a sparkling, mythical city.
"If you wait here, Crow, and keep my friend safe, I promise to bring you the shiniest thing in the forest."
Well, Mordecai ran to the spot where the cave was. He knew where to go. He just followed the ache in the spot where his unicorn used to be, and he arrived to smash open a dull gray rock, and sure enough, inside were the shiniest crystals he'd ever seen. They gleamed like a starry night sky. Mordecai balanced the geode under his chin and ran, head down, back to the crow to barter for his friend. Well, the crow was so thrilled with the geode that she happily forgot about breakfast, and she dropped Luna onto Mordecai's snout. When he crossed his eyes to look where she had landed, he could swear he saw the beginnings of a new unicorn there, right between his eyebrows. And so he nudged Luna back onto the little nub of horn. She didn't seem to notice a thing, which is a good thing, I suppose. He was just so glad to have his friend back, and he decided to celebrate by eating some more twigs. The winter went on and on, as it does up north. Most days were just like the one before, and nothing at all remarkable happened. Though one day a bush pilot flew overhead in an airplane, and on another day Mordecai found a little chickadee stranded in the snow with a broken wing. The chickadee was trying to hop up a tree to look for food, but he kept falling back down into the snow, and he was shivering, cold and hungry. Mordecai loved chickadees best of all, so very much, with their black little caps and their pretty calls. Of all the birds, Mordecai thought, they were by far the best listeners. So Mordecai scooped the little chickadee up onto his warm snout and lifted the delicate bird up to the branches he was about to graze on. When they'd had their fill at that tree, Mordecai told the bird to hop back onto his snout, and then they moved to the next tree. They went on and on like this through the remainder of the winter. The chickadee's wing got stronger and stronger. Mordecai was pretty sure that his unicorn must be emitting a healing energy. He could feel it. When the bird was strong enough to fly again, he really didn't want to fly away from Mordecai, so he stayed perched on the moosicorn's right antler, which was growing in nicely, all velvety and new. They would have gone on like this, the three of them, Mordecai, Luna in her chrysalis hanging on to Mordecai's pearlescent unicorn, which was about 2 inches long by now, and the chickadee, whose name is Sammy, perched on his antler. But one day, when the snow had melted just on the top and then froze again so that there was a hard crust of ice over everything, they found an injured snowshoe hare. When she saw Mordecai and Sammy and Luna, she tried to run away from them in a panic, but they were at the base of a hill and she couldn't get any traction, and so she ended up just sliding down backwards into Mordecai's tall legs.
Oh, please don't hurt me. I've just barely escaped from an Arctic fox, and my back foot hurts so much. It's hard to hop around on the slippery ice with a sore back leg, and I'm so scared and tired.
We will not hurt you. You look like you could use a nap, someplace safe, from foxes and wolves and owls. Would you like to curl up in my new antler for a while and have a nap while Sammy and I keep a lookout for you?
Would I? Oh, yes, I would. I was hoping to find a hollow log to hide in, but you never know who will come sniffing around. But nobody could hurt me on a moose. Are you a moose? Hey, why do you have a horn coming out of your forehead? And why is it so beautifully pearlescent and soothing to gaze at? It sure is comfortable on this velvety new antler. Thanks for the lift up. You can see so far from here.
Boy, I sure am getting sleepy. So sleepy.
And so it went. Before the foursome knew it, the snow began to melt, the rivers began to run freely, and the new delicious buds began to form on the trees. The sun shone the buttery, rich, warm light of spring, and Mordecai found himself standing in front of that same young ant who told him his antlers and horn would grow back if he performed 3 good deeds.
Hey, I'd like to thank you for your good advice. I rescued Luna from a crow and helped Sammy recover from a broken wing. And I helped Snowflake, the snowshoe hare, recover from a hurt paw. That's 3 good deeds, and look! My unicorn and antlers have grown back, even bigger than before.
Good job, citizens of the forest. I should be honest with you. Your antlers and unicorn will fall off every year and grow back again each spring. They would grow back even if you didn't do good deeds. But I asked you to do good deeds because I know that they are never time wasted. Doing good shines light all around you, and sometimes that's the best way to make it through a dark winter.